an interview with Ann Carvalho, Assistant Vice Provost for Graduate Studies, August 8th, 1989, in her office. All right, I guess we can start. That's the letter that went out. I wrote that after talking with four people, Bonner, Gelber, Irvine, and Schwartz, and it's just a set of questions that we worked out. So do you want to start off with your name and position?
Which, what I am now or what I was when I first started?
You can start off with what you were at that time.
My name is Ann Carvalho. I came here in September of 1966 as assistant to the chairman of the Department of Chemistry. Uh-huh. It was a professional level one, I guess. They didn't have professional levels back in the days. That was before UUP. Mm-hmm. That was before the first union on campus. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how old was I? Was around
29. All right. Fine.
You realize I'm telling my age here now.
Mm-hmm.
I came from American Cyanamid in Stamford, Connecticut, and I was a research chemist working on solid rocket propellants and high energy fuels for the ARPA project, the American Cyanamid. It was a confidential project for the government. My husband was transferred to Long Island from Connecticut, and my group leader, Stanley Staffy at American Cyanamid, and also one or two other people, the manager of our section, which was the solid rocket fuel section at American Cyanamid, were trying to get me to get jobs, and I had an interview at Brookhaven and one or two other places, and my group leader, Dr. Staffy, saw this listed in the Chemical Engineering News as the opening in the chemistry department, and they sort of forced me to come and interview. In fact, they made the phone call for me to Dr. Bonner, saying that they had somebody and they were going to force me to come down. I came down on a Saturday morning and met with Dr. Bonner and also Sidney Gelber.
Mm-hmm.
And interview for position was Dr. Francis Bonner and Sidney Gelber.
Right.
Not Sidney Gelber, excuse me, one Sidney.
Stan Ross.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, it was Stanley Ross. It was before Sidney's time.
Yeah.
Stanley went to the University of Texas, where I came from. Why did you come? Even though I took a drastic salary cut when I came, it was a new job. They didn't have any criteria for the job, and it was something in education. I've always enjoyed university life,
right.
And I enjoyed college, and that's right. I felt like that I would be at the beginning of an institution, because Stony Brook had just moved here. Mm-hmm. Had been here about 4 years.
Right. What was your alma mater?
I got my bachelor's degree in chemistry from the University of Texas at Austin, and then I got my master's degree in science education from Fairfield University in Fairfield, Connecticut.
I see.
And that I went part-time because my company paid for it. American Science was very good with their educational benefits.
So the real reason was that your husband got a position here.
Mm-hmm. In Nassau County.
In Nassau County, I see.
And I had, well, he got it, and then I was commuting back and forth to American Cyanamid from near Hicksville.
Yes.
And that was about a little over an hour commute because I couldn't leave right when he was transferred in June. I had two graduate students and an undergraduate student working for me for the summer on a project, research project. So I really could not leave them until I got them through the summer. And I had several patents, confidential patents, that I had to get out with American Cyanamid. And that continued for about a year. I had several projects I had to finish.
All right. Well, now, when did you come over from chemistry to the graduate school?
In 1969.
1969. What do you know about the graduate school prior to 69?
Well, we had several acting deans. I know David Fox was one. When I was here at the university, it was Jordan.
Was he acting?
Yes.
He was, I see.
I don't think, as far as I know, I don't think he was ever made official. I think he was acting for about 2.5 years.
What was his first name?
Robert Jordan. I believe he went to Wisconsin or Michigan or someplace when he left here. And when he left, then Herbert Weisinger was appointed official dean.
I see.
But as far as I know, I think Robert Jordan was. I could check. I have all the old graduate catalogs here. I could check. But as far as I don't think he was ever appointed official. He was just acting.
He was in English.
He was English also, right? And before him, I believe, was Fox. No, David. No, it's one between.
Feingold?
I think Feingold was acting too for a while.
That must have been back in the Oyster Bay days, before we came out in 62.
I think Feingold was first, and then David Fox, and then Robert Jordan was acting, and then Herbert came.
I know I worked with Dave Fox when I was
64 to 66.
62 to 65.
Okay, 62 to 65. Right. Then 65, see, Herbert came what? Was it spring of 69 or fall of 68?
I'm not sure. I've interviewed him. So
okay, it's all right on the tapes.
All right. Number six, the reasons were primarily family and the fact that your husband was...
I was looking for a position, and it was between here and Brookhaven and Grumman, and there was another job that I was interviewing. And I decided to make a change and go into academia.
Mm-hmm. What did you understand about this is seven? About the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook?
When Rockefeller established the university system back in 58, I believe, if I remember reading, they wanted to have university centers on each corner or each area of the state. In other words, to have it, there was an original plan to have one on Long Island. And I thought that was the reason it was created, to have one here on Long Island compared to the ones upstate. That's why I opened it Planted Fields, was to have a major institution. Because the State University in New York didn't exist up until that point, until it was created.
It was created in
48. By Dewey. Okay, but I mean the university system didn't start until much later. They had colleges, but they didn't have the universities, did they? Where's your taxing? I don't remember.
The university was created actually by legislation in 48.
48?
Yes. State supported schools existed long before that.
Right, the colleges.
Those were the teachers' colleges, old normal schools, and the contract colleges at Gordon Howe and Syracuse and Alfred.
But I guess they were the budget or something. I know Rockefeller had something to do with it. I remember his visit to campus when he came for the breaking of one of the groundbreaking. one of the buildings.
Well, he came in 60. Did he come subsequently?
I think he came in 66.
Right.
When the Earth and Space Science Building, remember when we broke ground for that? He took the first shovel.
I see.
Nelson Rockefeller.
Good. Good. Now, that's...
Because I remember he was picketed. By a secretary, several people, one of them was the secretary from the chemistry department.
Oh, really?
And Francis got so angry, he picked the picket sign she had and broke it over his knee and threw it to the ground. those were the days.
Yeah.
But I understood that, you know, this was one of the plans of the forming of one of the university centers.
Oh, it was.
Because of population here on Long Island.
What were your impressions of Stony Brook? The campus, people, leadership, so on.
Had a lot more spirit.
A lot more spirit.
We were, you knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You worked together more. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much political backstabbing. There wasn't as much looking out for your own advancement as there is now. There was a lot of hard work in trying to pull together a university. People just worked together more. It was friendlier. We used to have a faculty club over in the old G Quad, faculty dining room. And everybody from every department used to go over and eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And you would sit with everybody from the president on down. There wasn't as much, you remember the times. There wasn't as much division according to seniority or according to level as there is now.
It wasn't as bureaucratic.
It wasn't bureaucratic. It was really a family. We were all striving for the same goal, which was to establish a university. And we were making rules as we went along because there weren't any rules. Just like the graduate bulletin, there weren't any rules. And I can remember back reading through graduate bulletins from other institutions across the United States, coming up with regulations that would be great to have, and we'd put them before the graduate council and we'd vote them in. And that's how we developed the graduate bulletin. It's how we developed a lot of things. It was a lot of hard work. And the campus was constantly in a state of building. You never knew where you're going to park when you came. I mean, one day there'd be a parking lot, the next day there'd be a hole. But we sort of, I don't know, it was a lot, there were a lot of parties in the sense that the cohesiveness.
Yes.
People were friendly. People knew each other. They called you by their first name. I can remember when John Toe first became president. One thing about him, I mean, I would never know when I was at the point I was still in chemistry, and all of a sudden I'd get a phone call and he'd say, "Ann, this is Johnny." You know, he never, I mean, seldom did you ever have a secretary say, "Dr. Toe would like to speak to you." You know, it would be this type of thing. It was, they knew, the administration seemed to know everybody from the janitors all the way up, and people knew that. You had a sense that what you did mattered. And so therefore you killed yourself to make a university because you'd be somewhere and Alec Pond would come up and say, "I heard about so-and-so. That's a good job. Keep up the good work." They were interested in not only the faculty, but the secretaries, the staff, the janitors, the cleaners, and the students as people, not as just
a
line number.
Do you think that it existed as a spirit before John Toe came, or was it a function of his nature, or what?
I don't know, because when I came, John Toe had just been inaugurated,
yes.
So I was not here before John Toe when the other acting president.
That was me.
That was you. Yeah, I wasn't here, so I don't know.
Right.
I mean, you've always spoken to me.
Yes.
Sidney Gilbert did. Stan Ross always did. Alec Pond, John Toll, even Dick Schmidt.
Yes.
I mean, remembered who I was as a person. The current administration, though I've been on a lot of committees, I can meet them outside of a committee as if they never saw me. I never existed. And that is what's lost. The you know, that type of knowing your people and knowing things about them. Maybe because we've become too large, I don't know. Though I came from large universities that were much, much larger than this, and it still has the type of spirit and type of communication that we used to have.
That was Texas?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I went there, Texas had 18,000. When I left, it had close to 30. Now it has 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know.
All right.
What events, what persons, what experiences?
Yes.
Well, let's see. I guess the major things that stand out in my mind are the 1969 riots.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Riots. I was in the graduate school when that started. And we did have a major takeover of the graduate school. And I will never forget it. The students came in with knives and billy clubs, and immediately they just walked up to people. They just, like 15 or 20 of them, hit our office, and they slashed all the phone calls. The phone lines just went like this, telephone lines just started cutting them. And Herbert was in his office, and we had a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we had a secretary who was on the phone talking with her. And she was talking to somebody, and they came up and cut the phone line right here with this big knife. And she went, like that, and made a funny sound. It looked so funny. We all got hysterical at that point. And I remember
Who were they?
The student, the secretaries? Oh, gee.
No, I don't mean that.
The
I
students?
Mean, yes. What students were they?
They were the students who were, they were rioting at that time. They were undergrads.
This was after the drug bust?
Right after, about the same time. I assume it was when they occupied the library.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's, now you're taxing my memory. I don't know if it was after the early morning hour drug bust or before. They took over the library, the president's office, and everything. And I know Herbert spent many hours overnight, days or so, talking to them to try to get them to give up before they were arrested. And I don't know the exact time sequences because it's been in my mind, it's fuzzy. I also remember, the other thing that stands out in my mind is when we tried to keep the place from being burnt down. You remember, I'm sure you remember this. Remember when we used to walk the buildings at night?
You know, I had a sabbatical from 69 to 70, and I wasn't here from August of 69.
So you missed all that good time.
I think I missed some of that, yes.
Well, some of us, I know Mike Dency in this office and myself in the graduate school, we were involved in it. And we would come to work midday, a little after the afternoon, and work until, well, different shifts. I came about 1 in the afternoon, and I was on about the 3 to 11 shift. And I would work, and really at 3 o'clock, it was when it started to get dark. And I would take the early 3 or 4 hours in the evening to about 11 o'clock. And you had a walkie-talkie and a flashlight. And my assignment was the old engineering building. Mm-hmm. And what you did was walk up and down the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And if you smelled smoke or heard anything, you called security on the two-way radio. And I only had one Molotov cocktail that went into one lab while I was patrolling.
Mm-hmm.
But we would... The staff members and faculty would sign up for tours of duty to keep this place from literally being burnt down. Because they were trying to burn it down.
Do you have any sense of where the leadership in the students was located? Who did it?
Well, one was Mitch Cohen.
Yes.
And there was a group of about 10 or 12 others that were real radicals. And I don't, because I was not involved with undergrads, so I don't remember all the names. It was Mitch and some of his predecessors, which was two or three students before him around that time. There was a girl, and she was heavy set, but I don't remember her name. Dark hair.
Not Judy. Judy Ships.
I don't, as Ships. I say, I don't know, because I was not involved with undergraduates, so I didn't know their names. But it was a wild time.
Mm. You think this was 69?
This was 69, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, but I mean, someone else would have to verify it when we were trying to keep some of the buildings from being burned down. Yeah. And I don't even remember how long it lasted. Someone that could probably help me would be Ann McKean. I don't know where she is. She was the bursar here at that time.
I see.
She retired a few years back.
McKean.
McKeen. And she was head bursar here at the university. Kathy in the bursar's office may know how to get in touch with her, but Ann would remember some of this. Other things I remember is back in the days we didn't have courier service, and this was back in 68, 69, when Ann first came on board, 70. And she and I used to go to, she'd have different people. One day a week we'd go to lunch together. And in her first, she'd have the day's receipts for the university campus in her first. And we'd very nonchalantly go by the bank and we'd have hundreds of thousands of dollars in her first. Because we didn't have courier service.
Yeah.
That's telling you back when we did things like crazy. And it was, when I first came to the graduate school in 69, one of my first jobs was try to straighten out the graduate school, the registrar's records on graduate students, because back before then, they'd register, graduate students would register whenever they got ready to. Not necessarily at the beginning of the semester. I mean, they'd register at any time, and half some time they never did register. And we were trying to clear up the billing, and that's when the register, the bursar and student counts records were over in the infirmary, when they were located over there. And I spent weeks one summer going through records trying to clear up previous bills for graduate students and find out who they were and to get the records of who our graduate students were straight and to get them registered at the beginning of the semester. And I remember some of the bills we never could verify either pro or con for the student, and we finally just had to mark them off the books. As not, I mean, we just had to void them because no one could prove either way. It was such mess. So those are some of the things I remember that stands out in my mind. Demonstrations and things, but that's...
Were there any professional meetings here on campus? One that I know of was the International Crystallographers
Conference. Yes, that's when I was in chemistry, right after I left chemistry.
I see.
Right.
What year was that?
I left chemistry in 69, I believe it was in 70. Natalie Feast ran it. She came, she took my place in chemistry. It's either 70 or 71.
I see.
There were several others. But I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I know there were some back in those days.
Uh-huh.
But you're asking me things I don't remember.
Well, you're doing very well.
What was understanding of your own place in the future of Stony Brook? Gee, I don't know.
Why did you come over, for instance, to the graduate school?
Dr. Bonner had become not well in the last year I was in the chemistry department, and we didn't necessarily see eye to eye in the last year, and I finally just decide that I had had it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had, I forget what precipitated, he had said something, and I was not even involved in it, and it had made me very angry. So I handed him a resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And
those things happen.
Told him he could have it, and, you know, where he could put it. And I left, and I got offered a teaching job at Osterley High School in chemistry because I'm certified to teach. And I said, well, I wanted to paint my living room for 2 weeks. And in the meantime, I got a call from Paul Dolan in the graduate school. He said, we don't have a job, but we want you. Would you come? And I said, well, what would I be doing? They said, we don't know. You'll just create your job. I said, I'll let you know. I also was interviewed in undergraduate admissions, but Dr. Bonner blocked that admission. He found out about that and wrote a very, not very nice letter, which I've never really, but he was ill. I have to sort of overlook it now in retrospect because he was, that's when he really then got very ill. And I think a lot of it was his illness.
Psychological?
I don't know. He was just, I know he had some problems and I know what they were. But I did accept the job in the graduate school. Mm-hmm. Because between Herbert and Paul Dolan twisting my arm.
What was Paul Dolan's position then?
He was assistant dean.
Assistant dean in the graduate school.
I believe it was assistant. I don't know if the title was assistant in those days. Because Dan Dicker was part-time. He was half-time.
Well, he's an engineer.
Right. But he was half-time. Here in the graduate school. And I don't know if Paul was assistant. Paul came from the president's office where he was an intern. And he was an internship over there. And I don't know if he was official. I know later on he was officially assistant dean, but I don't know if he started in the graduate school as assistant dean. And so I came and was just, Paul and Herbert both said, we're going to grow. And there. So that's how we started. All the application material, all the catalogs, the regulations. Herbert's one of the first jobs he told me in 69, he said, we have got to start establishing rules like a regular university. And he said, here's our catalog and up at the land. Well, 1 year it was mimeographed and the other years it's very, very simple. He said, we've got to get our act together. And that was sort of, I was just given free rein to try to pull the admissions and everything and get us onto a minimum admission requirements and all kinds of competency.
Your own association with the institution worked out for you personally?
I've enjoyed it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Good.
I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy working with the graduate students. I enjoy mm-hmm. I mean, it's frustrating. I think the only frustrating part is we don't have enough help. Mm-hmm. And we can't do the things I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed it, and I've got a lot of projects I feel that I've accomplished and a lot more I want to accomplish before I leave here.
What are some of the things you want to do?
Well, I want to eventually get all the admissions and the student data file totally computerized so that we can do throughput studies or get statistics just by pulling things out of the computer. Right now it's not in there and you have to do a lot by hand. We're getting the admission system, it's progressing. We want to eventually have it so that things are on a computer, the department can track documents via the computer mainframe. Mm-hmm. And all input into the student data file will be done by computer, and there'll be no key punch, it'll be op scan or something like that, or inputting from a central location. And rules and regulations, I'm still trying to work on a manual for this office. I've been working on it for 15 years. I'd like to do some reports mm-hmm. on some, you know, 20 years, the first 10 years of the first, and do things like the quality of our students, where they came from, do some.
Well, now, let's see. Ray Manusco, do you know him?
Oh, yes. Oh, I've worked with Ray for many years.
Yes. Well, that's the kind of thing he's been doing, apparently, for undergraduates and the graduates.
But they don't have the data for the graduates. But
they don't have
the things that they don't have, all the I have some files. I have some, what I call my header files, and I keep adding to it and correcting it, and I would say I have 99% of every student who was ever enrolled in graduate school on this file. By name, ID, birth date, sex, entering major, entering date, things like that. I'm missing a few back in probably 63, 64 that I'm still going back. We're microfilming. I'm trying to get things on microfiche so we have a complete record. And I want to take this file eventually and be able to match it and do a real profile and add to it, if I ever have any help to do it, the school codes, look them up and actually input where they came from. That's what we're lacking, is the school codes and what kind of grades they come in. But that's a massive effort.
Yes.
I do have GRE scores. I'm trying to get up to date because I had to drop it a few years back, and I'm trying to pick up the pieces.
You had
GRE scores. I try to.
Oh,
I have those on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
On the computer, and I hope to be able to get those back up to date and do some runs on those.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Something to. I'd like to do some. Keep historical records.
Yes.
Because see, the problem is that the registrar, for years, if a student enrolled and then withdrew within a certain point in the semester, the registrar purged the record, so that student never ever showed up as being a student here. And that, in a sense, causes the data not to be realistic. To me, if a student registered and withdrew the second day, that student was a student here, for even
yes.
for one day.
Yes.
And just to take the people who finished the semester is not necessary, it's misleading. And so I've got all these people whom you try to trace through the registrar and they've never heard of them, but I know they registered
mm-hmm.
and they withdrew maybe the third week, second week, fourth week
mm-hmm.
classes.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
So I've got, you know, to finish up and get rid of all this junk. So it's a lot of little things I would like to do.
Yeah.
They're not little, they're major, but I mean, I'd like this before I leave. I've got 11 years to retirement.
Well, all right, 11 years.
It's getting there. And expectations, they have worked out. I only have a master's degree, so I couldn't really, if I'd had my doctorate, I probably could have gone higher, but I didn't have my doctorate, so I was stuck.
Do you think, at times of going back into some kind of research work?
I'm too far away from it.
So.
The problem with something like chemistry, you become obsolete in a very few years.
Right.
And
yeah.
once I left, so much, within 2 years from the time I left, I was obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to go back into research. That's a problem I think a lot of administrators have. If they're a research-oriented person, and they go into administration, it's very difficult for them to do, unless they keep one foot in it, research. It's very difficult for them to ever go back.
That's one reason that when I left Brookhaven, I did not go back into the teaching of history.
Mm-hmm.
I felt too far away from
Well,
it.
If you're going to be a good administrator, you can't keep a foot in both worlds.
That's right.
You've got, and I can see why some universities have said we want someone who's majored in educational administration, where they won't go back and to the research lab, say, in chemistry, because you can't do both. You shortchange one or the other.
Don Toll told me when he first came, he was going to teach at least one course. He never did.
Yeah. And it's very hard, because you're not going to give, and to be an administrator, it takes 48 hours and a 24-hour day. And you can't be going back and worrying about your research.
You can
grant
plan your own
research.
Day, but then things come in that you can't foresee.
Right.
And that completely upset the schedule.
So.
All right. Were your activities in any way off campus?
And what do you mean off campus?
Well, did you have any relations with the central office
of yes.
Albany?
Oh, yes. Back in the early days. I used to go to Albany regularly.
All right. What
George
was the nature?
Frangos. Meeting with the graduate dean's meetings, going up for other any kind of problems. you know, we'd have meetings on different subjects.
With whom did you go? Did you go by yourself?
Sometime I went by myself. Sometime I went with Mike Dancy, and I used to go up once in a while on FTEs when we had the headcount problems back in the early days. Sometime I just go out up to represent Herbert at a meeting. We used to go up quite frequently.
What was your impression of the people in Albany?
Back in those days, they were good.
Who, for instance?
Well, we always worked with George Frangos a lot. He was later years.
Frangos.
He's no longer there. He was in the center. He was the graduate person in the main office, in the center center.
F-R-A-N-G-O-S.
N-G-O-S.
S.
Mm-hmm. George.
I see.
He's no longer. He left about a year ago. I dealt with the other university centers. The dean's offices, graduate offices, and all the other three of the university centers, and knew them all quite well. Mm-hmm. Still know a number of them. But we used to work with Paul Simon a lot. Still work with Bill Barber in Buffalo. Knew them all by first name.
On what case? What kind of cases? Or what kind of problems?
Oh, with the three university centers, used to be that when memorandum came down from SUNY Central, or from the Bureau of the Budget or the legislature to the president's office, it went into an open pit. No one ever found it again. It never got to the graduate school. So the way we found out what was happening is the four university centers, the graduate schools would call one another, what's happening, what's happening?
Yeah.
And we usually would find out 3 weeks before the president did of what was coming down the pipeline. So we kept in touch. And also, I still do this. Anything on coming down, I want to find out what's anything new is happening in Albany, I'll call Bill Barber in Buffalo and I say, you know, what are you hearing about so-and-so? Are they going to do this or do that? Have you heard anything? Or what the new rules coming out of the budget or the legislature or SUNY Central? Have you heard what's happening in SUNY Central? You know, what their politics are? And we would keep in touch, would call them for what recommendation. How do you handle certain things? How do you handle, when the whole furor in the 70s came on the FTE or the foreign students. Remember when we first had about 73, we had the legislature investigation on too many foreign students. So we got together with the three university centers and figured out what our strategy was going to be and this type of thing. And in those days, we worked together. The four university centers were very powerful in the whole when they met in Albany with what they call the dean's meetings. The deans at those days from the graduate schools, well, Herbert was well respected in the state. He was outstanding as though. He was respected in the GRE board in the North Middle States and Northeastern Association. As a graduate dean, Herbert represented the university and just, extraordinary. He was known everywhere. Here on campus, a lot of people didn't like him because he could really write the caustic memos. But he was fair.
Mm-hmm.
English department didn't like him because he didn't play favorites. But he was fair, and he was well. He represented the university the best of any graduate dean we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense of prestige, he could go to a meeting, and when he spoke, people listened. We haven't had that since.
You haven't?
Not in the same caliber.
I see. Who's graduate dean now?
Nobody. Victor left in February. We don't have anyone.
I see.
Victor came, he came, 2 years, 2.5 years ago? Before he came, Jerry Schuber was over here acting dean.
Of the graduate school?
Of the graduate school, before he went over to be provost.
I see.
Okay. When he went over to be provost, we didn't have
position wasn't filled?
Wasn't filled at that point. Barbara Bentley had been had left, so we didn't have an associate. At the same time, I didn't have a financial person. So I had Bob Schneider from research, who went to the big meetings like VPAG, and then you had me. And we got the payroll out, and we got the reviews off the ground, and until Lichter came and board in November. I mean,
why did he leave, do you know?
He got another job.
I see.
He got a job with a private foundation that gave out grant money in New York City.
Mm-hmm. That's simpler.
And it was a good job. And it was one that Bob could not turn down.
Yeah. The offer came to him.
Yeah. The offer came to him. He did not seek it out. Now, before him, of course, we had David Glass. Mm-hmm. He didn't last too long. And before him, we had Jake Bigelassen.
Jake, yeah.
And Jake resigned. And between Jake and David, we had Bob Sokol for only 18 months. But Bob originally took it only for 18 months, and he told everybody that's it. Bob was excellent. I really admired Bob Sokol.
Is he still with us?
Yes, he's still in the College in Evolution.
I see.
I admired Bob as second to Herbert. Mm-hmm. Bob was a... extremely bright person. He was fluent in Chinese and I don't know what, 4 or 5 languages. Bob you could disagree with, Bob Sokol. Now, he may make his own decision and do something you didn't like, but he didn't pull any fast ones or anything. He was very, I admired him. He reminded me of a soldier from the Hessian Wars. I mean, very, you know, very straight and very strong and somewhat stubborn. But underneath that, he was a very intelligent person who weighed the pros and the cons very carefully.
How long has he been here, do you know? Do you have any idea?
At the university? I don't know. But he was a point actor. So we've been through the many.
And you have no graduate dean now. Is there a search committee?
Not that I know. I don't know what's happening now. Alex would be the one that know what's happening. Hmm. He's the associate.
Who would?
Alex King.
Okay.
He's our associate. That's the relation. What capacity?
Right.
I also had relations with when we had the Washington office.
Right.
I used to go down contacts with them. And my activities weren't confined to Stony Brook in the sense I had outside groups and agencies that I'd still deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I work with IIE Fulbright out of New York City, and I'm active in ACRO for years.
What's ACRO?
American Association for Collegiate Registrars and Admissions Offices. And I'm a member of the monograph committee. And I've had many presentations and not published, but to ACRO and the Council of Graduate Schools, I did this back a few years back.
Graduate Admissions Directory.
It's out of date now, but I did that back. So I've done a lot of outreach.
Stony Brook, yeah.
Yeah, Stony Brook did it, but we did it
for them.
For the Council of Graduate Schools and the ACRO.
Oh, I see.
And I did a questionnaire, and our print shop printed that, by the way. It's the first thing they ever printed. If you look inside, it's a chart. Part of it's a directory, but it's also a chart. First thing they did on computer. I gave them a floppy disk, and it's the first thing they printed here in our print shop on the off of a floppy disk.
Mm-hmm.
I was the guinea pig. They did a good job.
Yes.
So we published that. And so I'm active, still active in ACRO. I have a lot of outside. Give me outside things.
Okay.
What do you feel you had accomplished at Stony Brook by 1971?
You've been outlining that.
I've been outlining that.
I think pretty well.
By 71, we were starting to become a university. It's hard to believe that I've been here as long as I have, 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
lot has happened in 20 years.
Certainly has. 27 years since I first came. But I've been retired since then. Well, anyone else, this is 15, anyone else that you can think of as, you have mentioned Alec and Dick Schmidt.
And John Toll.
John Toll.
I mean, Johnny was, Johnny was very important. He was the perfect person for the job.
At the time.
At the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people, I don't think a lot of people realize that without Johnny Toll, even with all of Johnny's faults, don't get me wrong, I mean, Johnny wasn't perfect, we would not be where we are today.
Well, all right, let's talk about Johnny for a minute. Good points.
He knew how to work with Albany and the Bureau of the Budget. He knew how to wheel and deal,
mm-hmm.
and he did it effectively. We haven't had anyone since him that's been able to represent Stony Brook in the right way. He knew, I don't know how he did it, but from my counterparts and my friends in the other university centers, they said, Johnny always gets things for Stony Brook. How does he do it? And he did. I mean, we did very well during those years.
He was persistent.
Mm-hmm.
He had a mind that could hold more different things in memory right
mm-hmm.
up front at the same time than anybody that I dealt with.
I had watched him, I know once I was in his office and he was being interviewed by newspaper. And they asked him questions. He had the correct answers, and he wasn't making them up. I mean, it's as if he knew he was an expert on the subject. And that technique or that ability to, he could snow people with the information he had, and I think that's one reason why he did so well in Albany. He could totally, I mean, a lot of times presidents would go up to, or any president of a university, you ask them questions and they don't seem to know much. Well, with Johnny, you weren't sure if he really knew what he was talking about or not, but you didn't dare question him because he could just, and that was really a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, I think we owe him a lot, and I don't think the university realizes how much we owe him.
Well, I think some people do.
Some of us do, but
yeah.
A lot of people don't, you know that.
Yeah. Well, the faculty, as a rule, who haven't had administrative experience, do not have a clear picture of what administration involves.
Oh,